Hi, my name is Matt. I'm the founder of Regeneration Projects, a small business that sees two great bays and a river as our most important business partners. We started at a kitchen table during Melbourne's epic COVID-19 lockdown, and now we're a B Corp and actor in the UN decade on ecosystem restoration. As we begin this episode, we'd like to acknowledge the two great bays, Port Phillip and Western Port, which are known to First Peoples as Nam and Wurrumbirrin, or Murrumbik. Without the bays and the Birrarung Yarra River, we wouldn't be in business today. So we show deep respect to First Nations elders, past and present, who for over 60,000 years have cared for the bays, Birrarung, and their catchment areas. Their ecological knowledge inspires us to practice business in partnership with nature. Now, choosing a career that tackles environmental issues like climate change, biodiversity loss, or pollution can be incredibly rewarding, but also super tough. When we listen to the stories of passionate and pioneering professionals, it stokes our inner fire and belief so that we can keep doing the work that we know needs to be done to benefit future generations. That's what the Two Bays podcast is all about. Stories of hope, grit, and determination, inspiring the planet's next generation of ecological leaders and entrepreneurs. This series is made in partnership with the Mornington Peninsula Shire Council and celebrates the stories of business and community champions at the forefront of local climate action. Let's tune in. Womanjika, and welcome to the Two Bays podcast. My name is Matt Sykes, and along with Claire Wild, we're super excited to be embarking on this journey across the Mornington Peninsula through a dedicated podcast series that spotlights champions and businesses and organizations that are at the forefront of climate action. As we're learning as we go along, it's not just about climate action, it's about their lives, it's about their stories, and so many other things as well. Before we begin, we'll just acknowledge that connection to Boomerang and Bunurong country, those beautiful two bays, and their elders past and present connected to each of those communities. And I guess their role and understanding of how we live in this place in the past, in the present, and also into the future. Today, we're joined by Ralph Kenyon, who is the co-convener of Flinders Zero Carbon Community Incorporated, which is an offshoot of the broader Repower Mornington Peninsula brand. And Ralph has been having some incredible wins in collaboration with his community that really gives hope about what's possible when a group of passionate individuals really get behind a common purpose. Ralph, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for being with us. And I'm going to open with a question here of when we think about the Mornington Peninsula, there's certainly a lifestyle attached to it. And Flinders is, you know, a great example of a beautiful village where you've got the stunning beach there and the pier and the beautiful village of shops. But something that we might not always talk about is why is climate action so important for a place like Flinders and the broader Mornington Peninsula region? Would you like us to, kick off and guide us through it, how you see it?
Well, I suppose we see climate change as being a real issue, not just for Flinders, but for the whole world, really. And a group of us sort of got together a couple of years ago to see what we could do to, draw the community's attention to the issues of climate change and also how they might do their own little bit in their own backyard to improve the net reduction to zero of carbon emissions. And I suppose the importance of that for us is really we have a beautiful climate and a beautiful environment, and we'd like to pass a clean environment on to our children and grandchildren. So I suppose the unfortunate thing is that it's people like me who are retired who have time to actually put the effort in, and a group of like-minded other individuals came together to sit down around the table and say, okay, what can we do? And over a period of 2.5 years now, we've mapped out a roadmap of the sort of things we need to do as individuals and as community to try and reduce our climate emissions. And our aim is to try and get Flinders to be 100% energy source from renewables by 2030. Now, it's a big ask, and it's probably a net position as opposed to a gross position, which is slightly different, but we can only do what we can do with the resources and assets that we have available to us. So we've sort of mapped out a bit of a program, and in order to promote that program, we thought the best thing to do was to invite the community on the journey. And we started off with a climate forum, which was attended by about 80 or 90 people, which was really exciting for us. And from that, we learned that people were interested but didn't quite know what to do or how they could be involved. And so they tasked us with the responsibility to try and put together a series of activities that might help them reach net zero emissions. So as part of that process, we conducted a series of surveys. We had a Q&A session. We wanted to identify how much community interest and support there was. We completed a feasibility study on a local community battery. We provided a community forum on electric vehicles. We prepared a roadmap or a strategic plan, if you like, for what actions we need to take. And we formally incorporated as an incorporated association so that we had our own integrity, I suppose, as an organisation. We started off with support from the Flinders Community Association, but their major focus is on, you know, local town planning issues and things like that. And we see this as being a bit more specific and a bit more focused on energy and climate action. So we've done a number of things during that time, and we engaged with our local council, Mornington Peninsula Shire, to try and get their support for getting things on the ground. And initially we obtained what was successful in a climate action grant to try and put together a website for our organisation with a bit of background information and things like, you know, what can people do to electrify their homes or reduce their own local carbon emissions. So we're encouraging people to look at that website and try and glean ideas about what they might be able to do themselves. We've got a TV monitor set up in the local general store, which has a series of information screens on, you know, how do you electrify your home, what can you do with gas cooktops, knowing that Flinders is not on the gas main line, but everybody has portable gas bottles of LP gas, and a lot of people use gas for heating, for hot water, and also for cooking. So one of our screens on the general store is really about when your appliances are due for replacement or breakdown, think about whether you buy an induction cooktop, whether you get a heat pump, hot water service, whether you change your heating to some connection with, say, solar panels on the roof and a split system, something like that. So we're encouraging people to take up the mantle and run with increased solar rooftop capacity and so on. And part of that process was, if we're getting people to install solar on their rooftops, not everyone can afford a battery to retain some of that power. So a lot of that goes back to the grid. No one gets any money for it these days. So that makes it a bit more expensive, if you like, for people to actually put solar on. So prior to the last election, we engaged with the the then opposition, who were talking about the rollout of community batteries. And we thought this was an opportunity for us. So we did some groundwork. We did a feasibility study. And when the opportunity arose with the change of government and the emphasis on renewables, we submitted an application. And because we're only a small organisation, we engaged with Yarra Energy Foundation, who've been doing a lot of work in this space. But we also engaged more with our local shire. And as a consequence of that engagement, we were able to secure the shire's support for an application to go forward to the federal government. So the shire is actually the proponent for the Flinders Community Battery Project, albeit that, you know, we've sort of done the legwork to get that to that point. And we were successful in obtaining a community battery grant of $500,000 at the end of last year. And we're now in the process of doing the surveying, the getting the permits and things like that, getting the clearance from United Energy to install the battery. And it will be installed, we think, adjacent to our brand new community hall, which will have a 40 kilowatt battery system on its solar collection on its roof. And we think that's an ideal place to demonstrate the value of having a battery, but also the value of having solar panels to charge that battery. The battery would then be available to release energy during peak periods and after hours, which is when most demand comes on. So we see it as a pilot project for the peninsula, and over time we'd like to see more of these batteries being installed in other communities around the peninsula. So it's a bit of a journey, but that's where we're at the moment.
Absolutely. That's, as I said before we started, Claire, Ralph and his colleagues and community members have been very busy. And as he finished up there with that $500,000 grant to enable the community battery, you know, to come to life, it's a brilliant milestone. And Ralph, I think you might have had to present this before, because you just rolled us through that so nicely. Claire, I'm going to pass across to you as we go a bit deeper here.
Yeah. Firstly, Ralph, congratulations on becoming incorporated. It sounds like Flinders Zero Carbon Community Incorporated has started from a really grassroots and grown in a really organic way. And it's so awesome to see these initiatives that have started out of a real passion and a real purpose grow into their own entity that can kind of exist independently. And is a really solid thing rather than just an idea and perhaps a few actions. It also sounds like you've made some excellent headway, particularly in terms of the community battery and how that looks for people and how that will help you to achieve those goals of being 100% renewable by 2030, if I've got myself correct.
That's the target.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm going to assume that no journey is ever without a couple of bumps, and I'd be really interested to hear if you've encountered any challenges along the way and how you've overcome them, or maybe you haven't.
Well, there's always challenges and there's always opportunity, I suppose. Look, the hardest thing I think initially was to engage with the local council to bring them on board, and I think the best way we've been able to do that is by holding a community forum and inviting the council to attend and just hear the local people actually express their support for these sorts of initiatives. And I think the fact that we had, you know, close to 100 people at our major forum last year encouraged the council to think, well, this is real. The people of Flinders are supporting this. Maybe there's some opportunity for council to leverage off that support and be seen to be doing things as well. I mean, the Shire does have a climate action plan, but like a lot of big organisations and governments, You can have a plan, but it's very difficult always to implement and for people to see that action is actually being taken, because a lot of these plans take a long time to germinate, and the implementation is not always easy, and you're competing with other budget priorities all the time. So I think the fact that we had that massive level of community support from a population of just over 1,000, having 10% of our population present and supporting the initiative was an indication to the council that, yes, this was serious. And despite the fact that Flinders is economically probably a wealthy area, the process we've gone through and the initiative is something that could be duplicated in other communities, not necessarily as economically viable as Flinders. So our aim has always been to use this as a pilot project to demonstrate what can be done and what the benefits of these things might be for others. And one of the advantages we've got is once the battery's up and running and we're able to leverage the arbitrage opportunities that come with having power to release into the network at different times of the day, is that we hope to generate a small amount of income through that use of that battery. And we've always been keen to ensure that any income that we get goes back into renewable projects, not just in Flinders, but elsewhere across the peninsula. And the Shire, I think, was quite supportive of a community grant program that might come out of the revenue that's generated by an efficiently operating battery. So we're very pleased that they've agreed to that sort of approach. And from our point of view, it really means that there may be funding available to, you know, put solar on some people's houses that can't afford to do it, or to support a community house, or some, you know, some other facility that less socioeconomically advantaged people are able to do.
Yeah, Ralph, I mean, this is really inspiring. It's great to see that potential of it then flowing on and snowballing into other projects and places, and the way you've been able to, address that challenge of crossing the bridge between community and local government. And I'm sure many, many communities would love to be able to have 10% of their population so actively engaged in an initiative like this. Before we take a look at some of the benefits that you talked about, I'm just curious, you know, you mentioned that there's the potential that this becomes a model for other places, but obviously there's been some people involved with this, including yourself, that have experience and specific skill sets that help them navigate and progress in the ways that you have. And I guess for those that are in other places, including other parts of the Mornington Peninsula, maybe would you be able to share some of your previous experiences in life and perhaps also in work that you feel like have equipped you for the work that you're doing now at a community leadership level?
Well, it's a long piece of string, this one.
we're comfortable and we're up for the journey. Lead on.
Well, I suppose it goes back to each of us on the committee have a range of different backgrounds and experiences. From my own point of view, I started out working in the old Commonwealth Employment Service as an employment officer. So my engagement with community was certainly at the grassroots level for a long time, and I moved into a management role within that Department of Employment, into managing CES offices, and then moving into program management and administration. So over a period of 20 years, I progressed through a range of roles, which essentially were about community development and economic development, jobs, businesses, those sorts of things. One of the programs I set up in Victoria was the New Enterprise Incentive Scheme, which provides unemployed people with the opportunity to start their own business as a way of getting their own jobs. So from there, I moved actually across into local government and spent 9 years in firstly in customer service roles and then in economic development for about 7 years with Mornington Peninsula Shire. So I do have, you know, some connections there. But my experience is, you know, 20 years out of date now. So it's no longer, the people that I worked with are generally no longer there. But it's understanding how local government works, I think, that's important. From there, I moved into a role with the Port of Hastings Corporation as Chief Executive Officer. So I had the opportunity to work with the state government at that sort of CEO level. And had a lot of liaison with ministers and treasurers and so on in that role over a period of time. So that went on for about 10 years. When that sort of job came to an end, I moved back into a role with the Wimmera Development Association as their executive director, looking after 5 local government areas in the western part of Victoria. And I did a number of major projects over there that involved renewable energy, but also, some agricultural projects using soybeans and faba beans to produce protein powders, and managed to generate some investment income to establish a plant in Horsham, which attracted $20 million worth of investment. And we now have another line for pulses and faba beans and so on, which otherwise wouldn't be suitable for export. So that was a major project. And also working with the federal government on establishing a new weather radar out at the township of Rainbow. One of the things that surprised me in the Wimmera was that it's a major agricultural area, but when I went up there, there was no weather radar to cover the area. So you had farmers producing several billion dollars worth of crops and export for Australia with no weather information that was current. So we developed a business plan to put to government, both state and federal, and we managed to secure funding for that. And the Rainbow radar is now fully operational and providing significant benefits to that farming community in particular in the Wimmera. So they're the sort of things I've done as background. So not everyone in every community has someone like me who's had that sort of experience, but we have other members on our community, on our committee. We've got a physics professor, so someone who understands physics and things like that. But we've got other people who've been finance officers with big corporations and so on. So it's a fairly experienced group of people, and that obviously helps. But there's only a few of us, so we don't have a lot of we don't have any paid employees or staff. So whatever we do, we have to do ourselves. I think sometimes we burn the candle a bit longer than we need to, but if we don't do it, it won't get done. So that's basically who I am and where I come from. I'd have to say also that in terms of sustainability and sustainable development, one of the things I did when I was with council back in the 1990s was to develop a sustainable development program as part of our economic development strategy, and that led to the Shire taking on a campaign of sustainable peninsula. So, you know, my interest in climate and so on has been there for a long time.
Oh wow, Ralph, what a story. And that's also really cool to hear about all the work that's been happening around sustainability, you know, even since the 90s. I think sometimes sustainability can be thought of as something that's a relatively new concept, and it's really important for us to remember that it's been around for a few decades now. Incredible. I'd love for you to cast your mind back over your career and that amazing history that you've just shared with us. And if you could give yourself maybe two pieces of advice, and that could be early on in your career or maybe where you are now, that might have helped you with the benefit of hindsight to really create the biggest positive impact when it comes to climate action. What would those tips have been?
Oh, gee. I think that the greatest tip is to act on the initiatives and the ideas when you have them and try and do as much as you can to bring those things together. One of the things I did when I was with the Port of Hastings, one of my roles was to develop a 30-year plan for the development of the port. And Western Port is an environmentally sensitive area. So my approach was to look at what ports were doing around the world to improve their viability in sensitive environments. And the plan that I put forward, which we called the development of a green port, talked about, generating sufficient power within the port precinct to operate the port, for example, to try and reduce the emissions that were happening with the development of industry and infrastructure around the port. Other things were about using beneficial reuse of dredging material, looking at how you can enhance the environment by being within the environment. And I think those things I pushed myself pretty hard in those days to convince state government that was the approach that we should take. And at the time it was adopted enthusiastically by the state government. But with changes of government over time, a lot of those things have sort of not been lost, but the philosophy behind them is still being engaged with at the port now. So some of those things, I think if you don't take the initiative when it's there, you lose that opportunity. So that's probably the key thing I think we can do.
Yeah, 100%, Ralph. We've been really fortunate on the Two Bays podcast to have talked to a few different people, and we've asked similar questions to this in those different conversations. And it's really interesting to hear the alignment of what you've said with what we've heard from other people, particularly that idea of taking the initiative when the opportunity comes up and pursuing progress over perfection and not getting overwhelmed by all of the problems or all of the things that you could possibly do, just finding something to help you move in the right direction and then using that as momentum to keep going and keep making progress and sort of progressing that incremental change rather than saying, right, there's our 2030 100% renewable energy target. Let's get there tomorrow. I think that's that's very sage advice, I would say, because it can be a very overwhelming area to work in.
Yeah, look, there's lots of things that you can do, lots of different ideas that come to fruition. Just using solar hot water panels. I mean, it's something simple, but, 20 years ago when we installed solar hot water, it wasn't a very popular thing. But if you don't do it now, you're missing out. And I think it's important that, we do try and take that initiative when you can.
Yeah, Ralph, this is ringing strong, I guess, in hearing you walk through this and that sage advice, the way you put it there, Claire. I think it's such a great perspective. And I think maybe perhaps as an elder in the Mornington Peninsula community and someone that draws on such a wealth of experiences, one of the questions maybe as a closing one is that, there are a lot of businesses across the peninsula, some of them small family businesses, some of them are larger enterprises, and many of them, I guess, sometimes might look at climate or environmental action as as an extra or additional thing that they need to put on their agenda. But what sounds like you've had a long history of demonstrating that what can be positive for the environment is also good from an economic development perspective. Is there any, I don't know if there's a story or if there's an example or just a bit of advice that you might give those people in that kind of position that are umming and ahhing and do I step into that space? But yeah, just drawing on your experience, how would you put it to them?
Look, I think any business needs to focus on its bottom line and its ability to survive. But one of the things we're not good at in business in Australia, I don't think, is that we don't always look at the whole picture. We look at different things at different times. If you're looking at your energy purchasing, for example, you need to understand how much energy you're actually using, which pieces of equipment use more energy. Is there a way you can, you know, reduce the energy being used by that particular piece of equipment? Or can you do something about buying a, you know, green energy from somewhere? Can you put solar on your roof? Most factories have significant spaces above their heads, which a small investment now might mean a saving in their electricity bills for the next 20 years. So there are economic benefits in investing wisely and assessing what your energy needs are and making the effort to improve the quality of your business in that way.
Ralph, this is brilliant. I feel like there would be a lot of organisations that would be valuable and probably already doing this as an advisor or as a mentor. But for the time we've been able to spend together on the Two Bays podcast, we're very grateful for you sharing your experience and your stories. I mean, there's so many different themes here. Just a couple that jump out. This is the power of past experience and the value of elders and people that are retired and perhaps have that time that you were talking about to be able to chip in, probably in this case, above and beyond, but to create an intergenerational legacy. And this is the power of community-led action, not on its own, but in partnership with certainly government and no doubt business as well. But there is something going on in Flinders. And so next time we're visiting that way, we'll definitely be keeping an eye out for that TV screen that you mentioned and a number of other initiatives across the region. So yeah, a big thanks to you, Ralph. And I guess just congratulations really once again for all of the work that you've been able to achieve there. And I guess just to the ongoing success of the Flinders Zero Carbon Community Incorporated and the broader Repower Mornington Peninsula initiative. So until next time, this has been the Two Bays podcast with Matt and Claire. And thanks very much to Ralph Kenyon for being our special guest today. Over and out, and see you next episode. Amazing are those Mornington Peninsula climate champions. Must be something in the water. Against the odds, they're transforming climate anxiety into climate action. Keep your eyes out for new episodes coming soon. So you're feeling inspired and ready to act. What can you do next? Firstly, subscribe to the Two Bays podcast on your favourite channel. Then, visit the Regeneration Project's website for more info about our ecological leadership and strategic consultancy work. Lastly, don't forget to follow Regeneration Projects on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn, as well as subscribe to our seasonal newsletter. My name is Matt, and on behalf of Regeneration Projects and the Two Bays, thank you for tuning in and see you on the next episode of Two Bays, a Business and a Kitchen Table podcast.